Therapy with My Mom is intended for educational purposes only. Everything discussed on Therapy with My Mom is not to be taken as a medical recommendation, but rather as personal and professional opinion. This podcast is not meant to represent or replace psychotherapy services. If you are in need of emotional assistance, please seek out a local mental health professional that can cater to your individual needs. Welcome to Therapy with My Mom, a podcast hosted by a mother and son who love each other very much.
Aw, hi, I'm Julie Barkowskis. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, a certified addictions counselor, as well as a somatic experiencing practitioner. I've been providing therapy on an outpatient basis in my private practice for over 20 years.
I'm Ryan Barkowskis, her son, and a millennial that was graced with having two parents who are both social workers.
This podcast is here to educate our listeners on the various aspects surrounding mental health.
Our guests will include individuals who are going to share personal stories on mental health struggles, as well as professionals who can shed light on the array of therapeutic approaches.
We hope you enjoy the journey with us. Welcome to our show.
Hello. Welcome to Therapy with My Mom. As always, here hosting the show is me, Ryan Barkowskis, and my mom, Julie Barkowskis. Say hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Amazing. The most original joke there ever was. I wonder where I got my comedy chops from.
That's a mom joke, not a dad joke.
Is it? Oh, okay. Fantastic. This is a really special episode for us, especially for me, because of the guest today. This is someone, I think all of our guests have been special and important with their subject matters, but this person, our guest is shaking their head. This person is more special to me. I really, really like them. I dare say for the first time, I love them. This is my girlfriend, Larissa.
Hi, Larissa.
Hi, I'm the most special.
I was previously trying to take that title, but you know, I'll share it right now.
There can only be one.
There can only be one. We're going for a Highlander status in our relationship.
Well, I was just watching The Mandalorian, and it is, what is it? Their quote, something that is, you know, something that is the way. I'm terrible
now. It is
the
way. Yeah.
It is the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yep. It is the way.
So she's special. It is the way.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. It is the truth.
Yeah.
Yep.
Larissa, would you tell us what you're here to talk about today?
Yes. So I'm here to talk about divorce, which I feel like at this point I'm an expert in.
Woo!
Because I've now... Is that the wrong response to divorce?
I've now witnessed two divorces. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with Ross Geller from Friends. I have not been through two divorces.
You've not hit the hat trick yet. Yeah. The hat trick is
three. I've witnessed two divorces.
Yeah.
And they were very different. So I'm here to talk about my experiences with those different ways of getting divorced, and then how those experiences have led me to where I am now and my potential career path.
Right. So, I mean, specifically, and I'll let you speak for yourself, but being a child of divorce, right?
Yes. Not watching some rando family get divorced. It was my family. Let me clarify.
These are your examples. Right. Well, obviously I know some of your history, but I guess, you know, where does it start for you? Where does the story begin of like your first conscious memory of when your parents told you, or does this go back further?
I mean, I can provide some context so that the event of when they told me makes a little more sense.
Sure.
So I guess I can start with that.
Take it from the top.
Okay. So I was about 9 years old when my parents got divorced, and I'm about to be 27 now. So it was a while ago. I'm not 15. And
thank God.
I had never witnessed them fight. Or at least I don't ever remember it. I don't think they ever fought in front of us. So when they said that they were getting a divorce, I was really like shocked by that. I did not see it coming. In fact, I was such a spoiled child and still am that when they called me into their room, I thought I was getting a present. So I go into their room.
Yeah,
it was the opposite of a present. I go into their room and, you know, I'm like, oh, what's going on? Whatever. They're both sitting on the bed and looking serious. And so, you know, I'm like, maybe it's a surprise. Who knows? And quite a surprise that they told me they were separating. And I was like, okay, like, yeah, whatever, sure. But where's my present? And they were like, no, like, seriously, we're going to be separating. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then it took a few times of them being like, no, like, this is real. And then I was like, what? Like, it really hit me. And then I just remember bawling. And then I don't remember anything after that. It was like, I blacked out until we moved when I was like 10 or 11.
Sure.
I remember going around and looking at houses in a different part of town. Windermere, where we moved to, was just being developed. So there was like nothing there. I was like, what am I moving to? There's nothing going on. I'm about to be a teenager. So I'm like, what am I supposed to do over here? Nothing. And so my mom bought a house in Windermere. My dad stayed at the house that we were in Dr. Phillips. And he was there for a while, couldn't afford to stay in that house. So he was looking around, and luckily my parents were thoughtful enough of my brothers and me that they wanted to live close by so that visitation was easy. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a whole like custody battle or anything like that. They were just kind of like, this isn't working for us anymore. What do we do now? So
can I ask how old your brothers were at that time?
I'm 6 years older than them. So they were around 3.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my dad ended up moving down the street from us, like walking distance. And we went over there whenever we wanted to, but like officially we had weekends with him.
Just became a separate, it just became a split home. Like it wasn't,
mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, it's interesting. And some people might hear that and be like, wow, it's obviously an ideal situation. But like, do you remember any of like the emotional consequences of just feeling that separation of like, do you feel like that modeled for you what a relationship was supposed to be or not supposed to be?
I think if anything, it was like, this is how divorce should be.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I didn't know it at the time, because that's the only divorce I had ever seen. Mm-hmm. Like my grandparents remained together until they died. And I never witnessed them fight either. So for all I knew, like, everything was fine. Everyone was happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then when my parents got divorced, you know, I didn't take it very well because as amicable as it was, it's still traumatizing.
Yeah.
And I actually read for one of my final papers, I was doing a little extra research on divorce, and some studies have suggested that for a child, losing a parent in a divorce is akin to feelings of loss related to a death in the family. So it's really awful.
Mm-hmm.
Even for kids whose parents were friendly after,
mm-hmm.
as was, you know, the case with me.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, you're many, many years past that, but even in the context of death, a lot of times people say, well, death, we know, I mean, even in terms of shock or disbelief, I mean, sometimes it's hard to accept that this is real or it's really happened. There's also this piece that with divorce, that you have this loss that you can still have disbelief because there's the possible fantasy for the child that the parents will reunite and it isn't completely final. And and I know that my own experience, you know, your dad, Ryan, you know, my husband, our stepson, or his son, my stepson, you know, also had that kind of fantasy when I met my husband, and how that was really hard for him to see his dad actually move on. Mm-hmm. And then to say, well, wait a minute, you know, that was, that just brought up grief and loss for him in a way that was, he hadn't had to face that because it hadn't been presented yet.
Right.
So,
yeah. So do you feel, my half brother, my dad's firstborn, from what I understand, I mean, that was certainly challenging. He had his own issues at the time, somewhat separate from that, but like, I'm sure you could have felt like you just weren't accepted and you were fighting to feel accepted by him.
You know, I wouldn't say, I didn't think of it like I'm not accepted. I mm-hmm. looked at it as just appreciation that it was hard to accept his parents weren't going to get back together. And it wasn't until he was older, like a older teen, when he kind of said to his father and I, well, you two were made for each other. I can see why you two are together. So, you know, that was a really sure. important place of his life to kind of reach this point of, okay, there's a reason why my parents aren't together. And there's a reason why you two are together. And he could embrace that. It's similar to me when you guys moved off to the West Coast, you know, mm-hmm. it took me some time to accept or come to terms with this is reality. And I'm like, oh no, I have to live so far away, you know? And so, you know, for you, Larissa, I think I would be curious about the, you know, the level of shock, you know, the overwhelm that caused you to like really not take in or not even be able to absorb what happened in between, and how everything was so unsettled. And so really there was grief, but there's also, it sounds like anxiety that would been also there, you know, a combination of both.
For sure. I was a shy child growing up. I remember that about myself. But I was always described as like happy and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then after my parents divorced, like, and I started going through puberty, and what I learned later, I have my degree in psychology for undergrad, and I'm now studying marriage and family therapy. And in my undergrad, I learned that like most of the mental disorders, if you're predisposed to them, are triggered. Mm-hmm. And so shortly after I went through puberty, I must have been like 12 or 13. I was obviously really angry at the entire world. I developed depression, anxiety, and OCD. And I was diagnosed with all three of those around 12 or 13, which made a lot of sense. A major life event like that, and then moving to a whole other area of town where I didn't know anyone. Right. It would make sense that that would be the life trigger that then set off all of these things that I was already predisposed to. Mm-hmm. So that was tough. I developed a lot of anxiety. I was really upset all the time. When my mom started dating my now stepdad, I found out and I was really upset. I like thought in my mind, like, he's the reason my parents aren't together, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. Mm-hmm. Even though it was like a year or two removed from their divorce, my mom hadn't even known him when mm-hmm. they got divorced, but mm-hmm. I assigned the blame to him. And as he likes to jokingly bring up every once in a while, I threatened to slash his tires, which I didn't do, to clarify.
You didn't slash him, but you did threaten.
I did threaten.
Okay.
I did not follow through.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I would have.
You would have. If you had to.
If I had to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was really upset for the longest time. And when my dad met my now soon to be ex-stepmother, that was really upsetting too. Mm-hmm. And even more so for later reasons. But I don't know that I ever fantasized about my parents getting back together. I'm sure at some point, maybe immediately after the divorce, I was like, mm-hmm. I don't understand why this is happening. Like, why are we all of a sudden now all not together and mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But later on, I would ask both of my parents, like, what happened? Why did you get divorced? And each of them had their own story that made perfect sense. And it was just like, we grew apart. And my mom is type A, super outgoing, an event planner, like always likes to be around family. And my dad is very type B, introverted, wants his own space. So it totally made sense. And I was even like, I don't understand why you guys got married in the first place. So once I was old enough to understand their perspectives, it made sense and I couldn't be upset about it anymore.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And now they're still really good friends and we all hang out together and they talk often. And my dad is friends with my stepdad. And so like, that's a real ideal situation. Mm-hmm. That one, we lucked out with who my stepdad is, because he's probably like one of the best examples of a step parent, as you are, Julie, to Greg. Like, some people just get lucky. And then on mm-hmm. the other hand, I have a horrible stepmother. So and a lot of people feel mm-hmm. that way about their step parents, that mm-hmm. they feel like they're trying to replace their parent, or that like they're just mean, they don't love them and all that mm-hmm. stuff. But we were really lucky with my stepdad, and even luckier that he accepts that my dad is still such a close part of our family and even wants to hang out with him.
Yeah.
I was always so impressed. Just real quick, I just remember I don't remember how early on I realized this about like your family dynamic, but when you had told me about how your parents had split, and but it's still like amicable, like you guys would do holidays together, was that early on that like even holidays were still shared with your both parents?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, I didn't even mean like, I was gonna make a joke that like you thought you're gonna get a present, but then you had divorce, so maybe that means two presents at Christmas. But like, it didn't change.
I eventually rationalized it as that. I was like, okay, well, fine. You guys want to get me more stuff? That's fine with me. I don't care.
I'll act out so that you have to get me more things to make me
exactly.
feel better. But yeah, but you have like the family group chat that everyone texts in. Like, your stepdad and your dad are a part of that. Like, your dad is included in family discussions. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's I think super impressive. Really cool.
Yeah.
You know what I was going to say is, you know, as a therapist, I have certainly seen a variety of different versions of how divorces are handled, or how it's managed between parents, like how sometimes there's successful co-parenting, and then there's also a difficulty with blending, especially with blending if there's a sense of like competition between the step parent and the children, or the step parent and the ex. And, you know, there's all these other, you know, unresolved issues that people are walking in the door with that affect how they're not handling things well and having difficulty with the blending. It's a hard thing to do. It's a very hard thing to do. It takes someone who's, I think, has to be at least somewhat secure within themselves enough or respectful, right? To have the ability to be respectful, even if you don't see eye to eye or see things the same way.
Yeah. And I think it was helpful that my stepdad didn't have any kids to bring into this. And mm-hmm. he's 11 years younger than my mom. So he kind of inherited this almost dad role, because like he was a father figure to more so my brothers, because they're so much younger than me. Right. But he never got in the way of my dad, and he wasn't trying to replace my dad. And he also had some experience with a blended family, because his mom passed away when he was a teenager, and his dad eventually remarried and his wife had kids to bring into it. So he was familiar with like a blended family dynamic, mm-hmm. which was probably really helpful for him approaching a situation like this.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, my experience, like seeing your stepdad and how he interacts with it, obviously, yeah, he's been around for the boys. And for context, they're twins. So when we say the brothers, that they're the same age, he's been instrumental in their upbringing. Probably, you know, spending more time, would you say probably more time with them than your dad?
Yeah. Just because, you know, he lived with us. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, the logistics affects that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And later it would be that my stepmom would get in the way of our time with my dad. So that mm-hmm. started to interfere as well. And we eventually just wanted to, we would choose to spend our time more with my mom and our stepdad because sure. we didn't want to deal with what was going on over there.
Sure.
Yeah. Which is sad too. I mean, you're, you know, how painful it is to, you know, want to have a relationship with your father, want to have a health, you know, a healthy blended experience. And then also the, you know, not be able to have that with your father for all these different reasons. And so, I mean, so you talked a little bit about the depression and anxiety. And I was wondering if you had identified what has happened for you that you see that you've been able to repair as a result of your trauma. Like what steps do you think, and I use the word trauma because I think divorce is kind of like a trauma.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Yeah. And so I was wondering if you had kind of identified some things that you've been able to repair since then and what, you know, and maybe there are things that still linger, which I think a lot of people say it can't help but linger.
Like repair for within myself or with my relationships? Yeah, like
in terms of, I'll give you the example. Not feeling, you know, not having any way of seeing anything coming. There's a possibility that that experience at that young age, around 9 is what you were saying, could have had an impact on you having more anxiety around situations where if you don't see something coming, you become, or you don't know what's going to happen before it happens, that you can be more anxious. And so that event could actually be somewhat, there's some possibility that we could go back and maybe work on that. I'm not saying me, because I'm recommending you see a professional, not do therapy here. but at the same time, the idea would be, how can I see that that event itself, if I go back and find some ways to work through that and repair that, that I can possibly be less anxious today around not seeing something coming or not, you know, not being prepared. So, and I can obviously think one of the coping tools would be, oh, I'm going to be kind to that young girl. So I'll go back and be like an inner child conversation here. And I would say, what I'm going to do for that 9-year-old is I'm going to give her an opportunity to have some information ahead of time. I'm going to let her know more about what to expect and help her feel more prepared in life and let her, and even you now as an adult, which I've had conversations with so many people, and I'll say, you're an adult now. And sometimes we're still lost in that age that event happened and we're not recognizing, you know, I got experience now. I do know that I can kind of not be as naive as I once was. And I know that I'm not going to be as shocked, not that I can't get shocked, but I know that in life, I understand that there bad things can happen and I'm not going to be as maybe, you know, naive about that. So therefore I am already more prepared. I already have that wisdom. I don't need to be as afraid. That's already with me. Does that make any sense as I say that too?
Yeah. And it's interesting. I haven't thought about it in this way before, but I think I've kind of compartmentalized that shock of not seeing my parents' divorce coming only to relationships. Because like I used to work in events and you don't see things coming very often in events because mm-hmm. someone will be like, so-and-so didn't show up. What are we going to do? And then you're like, okay, well, you do this. And like that kind of thing never threw me. But before I moved out to California, I had a boyfriend who out of nowhere decided to break up with me right before we were going to take a trip out here to California. Didn't see it coming. There were no signs indicating that he was going to do that. And that really set me off. And I didn't even like this guy that much, to be honest. Like, I think I, at that time, I was just like, I'm with him because I want a boyfriend. And mm-hmm. I wanted to convince him to move to California with me, which I did. But I later left him in Florida and moved out here by myself. But anyway,
nice.
He, yeah, very glad that I, that
nice
I left
for you,
there.
Ryan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Worked out.
But I remember that day very vividly. I was out to breakfast with my mom and this guy texted me and was like, are you busy? Like, can you talk? And immediately whenever anybody says that to me, I'm like, what's going on? What's the fire? What's happening? And he wouldn't tell me. And he was like, you know, can I come over? And I was like, sure. Why? And he's like, is your mom home? I was like, yes. Why? And he came over and he didn't want to come inside. So we sat outside on the patio and he was just like, you know, I don't think it's working out or whatever he said. And I was like, what do you mean? Because this truly was out of nowhere. And we had been together for a few months and all he said was, I just thought I would have felt something by now. And I was like, what? And I had a drink next to me that I backhanded. And I was like, what? Like, I truly was like, I lost control a little bit. And I didn't even cry. Like, when I'm at that level, I get very matter of fact. And mm-hmm. It's just all very serious. Like, explain to me your reasoning then. Like, tell me what's going on. Mm-hmm. And after he left, I went up to my mom's room and I just started sobbing. And it wasn't at the loss of him in particular. It was because I didn't see it coming. And mm-hmm. I said that to her. I was like, this is out of nowhere. And so mm-hmm. when something comes at me out of nowhere in any other context, I can handle it. Right. It's just in the context of relationships that it really sets me off. And now that you say that, it's like, probably because I didn't see my parents' divorce coming.
Right. And so that's a very specific association that you have.
Yeah.
That, you know, and I kind of think about the reaction that you had with the, we'll call him boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, that the idea would be you were actually more able to speak and more able. So we talked that about the ability to then have some ability to be not completely frozen or not completely in shock. And that you, even when you voiced what you said to your mom, it was like, okay, we have some progress here. We already are starting to make some connections and we are getting more mobilized. We are making, you know, some connections. So, I mean, right there, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's not a complete repeat of the past. That's somewhat different from the past. And sometimes by me saying that to you, it might even be helpful because sometimes we just need to know we're evolving. Mm-hmm. And something has shifted and something is changing in me and that I am capable of, you know, evolving through this and working through this to the point where I'm no longer going to be affected by that. And being someone who's done a lot of trauma work on myself, I know that to be true. I know that things that used to trigger me don't trigger me anymore. You know, that's just something, I guess it would be hopefully a message of hope.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so yeah. You were also saying other things that you had experienced here as a result or how you feel you've been affected by your parents' very different divorces here. Is there anything else you want to add about that? Or did you want to talk a little bit more about what you've learned or what you see has happened as a result of that now as an adult?
I guess I'll just add how, like, especially when children are involved, how important it is for a couple to really evaluate, like, if they're not married yet, are you going to get married for the right reasons? Because I feel, and I feel like I can speak on behalf of everybody in my family, including my dad, that my dad did not marry my stepmom for the right reasons, which led to their eventual divorce. And I just feel like, sure, you can fall out of love with someone, and that's a perfectly fine reason to get divorced. But when children are involved, I think that people need to really evaluate the priorities. Like, is it something that we can work through? And get back to a place where we once were, for the sake of the children, but also for ourselves? Or is it really truly time to call it quits? And if so, how do we make that the easiest on the children?
Right.
And I think that's what my parents did, because my mom often told me that she felt so much guilt about leaving my dad because she didn't know whether to save herself, so to speak, or to save us. And that was a really hard decision for her, but she felt like her relationship with my dad wasn't letting her flourish in the way that she needed to. And so later on in my years, when we talked about that, I was like, I think you made the right decision, because like, you can't sacrifice yourself and your life because you only get one life. You can't just like go on and live another one. It was important for her to leave my dad, and I was able to understand that. Even though it had a negative effect on my brothers and me, they made it as easy as possible, and I appreciated that. And I feel like that's what everyone should do if they're going to be getting a divorce and they have kids.
I think it's incredible that you eventually would tell your mom, like, you have those reflections later on to say, Mom, I think you did make the right decision. I think that's important for her to hear, you know, having had that hard guilt and the feeling of like, am I royally messing up my kids by doing this? And I'm sure, you know, that influenced her decisions then to try to make it as, you know, peaceful a transfer of power that it was.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, that a lot of times when people are working through this, do I or don't I divorce? There's so many different factors involved. But one thing I would want to say is that there's always going to be an unfortunate consequence no matter what choice you make. And so sometimes people are trying to weigh out which is the lesser of two evils, so to speak. You know, like, well, if I don't do this and I'm miserable and I'm not happy, how would that affect my kids? And if I do this, it's going to affect them in a way that's going to involve them not having their current nuclear family that they're familiar with or that they know. So, you know, that's understandable that we're faced with those difficult choices and dilemmas. I do have one thing that you said that I talk to couples a lot about, and it's around the stages of like, I don't feel in love anymore. And there's many stages in relationships, and one of the stages of a relationship is commonly devaluation. And during that devaluation stage, which can happen after you've been together a couple years, it could happen when you're together 7 years or eight. What I can tell you is that they get to a point where they are grieving the loss of the fantasy that they thought they could have in that relationship. And so often it's like, well, you didn't turn out to be what my hopes and dreams were. And so therefore, I don't want to be with you anymore. And it isn't that they don't have the capacity to love each other or be together, but more of the unrealistic idea that love is an emotion rather than a verb. And that if I can get to the verb side of love, which is, I'm going to love you, I made a commitment to loving you. And I can think about many a time in my marriage with, you know, my husband, your dad, is that I was doing the action of love because that's what I made a commitment to. And he did the action of love. And what made me feel loved is knowing that he was committed to loving me rather than it was always he felt like it. And I think I hear that often with couples, like, well, they should feel like they want to do it. And I'm like, oh, well, we're going to be like really in trouble here. We're always reliant on the emotion of you know, it was like, I knew that mature love at a certain point of marriage, mature love is a commitment to love, even when you don't have the emotions there. And that is really the solid kind of relationships that I see can then just shine and be happy and whole and connected because it's not reliant on that constant emotion that has to be there, if that makes any sense to you guys.
Yeah. And that made me think of the book that I read and asked Ryan to read, gonna plug it, getting the love you want.
Yeah, we plugged it a few times.
Getting the love you want.
Yeah. It's you know, a book about for couples who are truly like on the brink of divorce or separation, mm-hmm. Or even who hate each other, and bringing them back from that and helping them learn to love and appreciate each other again. And what one of the things that I took away from it is, if you get back to the actions of love that you performed earlier on in your courtship, that it can bring back those feelings. And then you're like, oh yeah, like mm-hmm. I love this person because of this and this, and I appreciate when they do this and this. Mm-hmm. And at any stage of the relationship, Ryan and I did this, is to make a list of like, they call it caring behaviors. And there's a section of like, I feel loved and cared for when you did this, and this was mm-hmm. at like the beginning of the relationship. And then the next section is about where you currently are in the relationship. Like, I feel loved and cared for when you do this. And mm-hmm. then the next section is, I feel loved and cared for if you were to do this and this. So it's mm-hmm. past, present, and future. And really writing that out and sharing it with your partner can be so helpful, and be like, well, I didn't realize that you wanted me to do this. And mm-hmm. it's like, of course, how could you, if I've never verbalized it to you before? Mm-hmm. So that was like eye-opening to me. It's like, sure, the emotion comes at the beginning and can even be sustained for an extended period of time, but it's mm-hmm. as the relationship evolves, so is the emotion. And you're going to need to work on your relationship, because every relationship is work. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be all work, and it shouldn't be all work, mm-hmm. but it does take work. And I think a lot of people don't realize or accept that, mm-hmm. which probably contributes to why the divorce rate is so high.
Yeah, I think there's a ton of truth in all that. And those are similar things that I'm familiar with, as you described. Some of that even has to do with identifying a love that you love language, or something that you wanted or needed growing up. And so this is for both of you, actually. Relationship subject here, homework.
Give it to it us.
Yes. It would be, what did I always want when I was growing up from my parents that would have made me feel more loved? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then go back to your partner, current mm-hmm. partner, and say, what, and look at your comments about what you wanted the other person to do to make you feel loved, and see how similar those are, and also see in what ways you might add to that. Because a lot of times we're going to be looking for love language needs that weren't met growing up in our future relationships. And we need to kind of be able to identify that, and or again, repair the past, so it's not put on the partner. It's not the partner's responsibility to take care of what didn't happen when we were growing up. So mm-hmm. does that make any sense?
Yep.
I have a tendency to say that. I notice when I ask questions like, does anybody, you know, do you get what I'm saying?
Well, that's
I'm
good.
Like, does it make any sense? Does it make any sense?
That's part of the literature in the book, is to be like making sure that your message is received, being like, yeah mm-hmm. like, does, is that mm-hmm. clear? And that's important. That's a good habit of yours. I'm reading the book. I'm sorry I'm so slow to read it, but I am reading the book, and I am on that section of talking about, yeah, people repairing those connections by redoing and bringing back in like loving things that make them feel hopeful about the relationship again, which is great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So moving to the next subject here.
Yes.
Is I think you said something like, what you've seen the effects are, like how you've emerged out of this and are using it to for good, I guess, is what I would understand.
What's your goal now? How are you going to use this to save other people, other children?
So I recently decided to get a master's in marriage and family therapy, and I'm just wrapping up my first term, and I've already learned so much and have a good idea of what I want to do as an MFT, if that is indeed like where I stop my education. I might get more, who knows? But I feel really drawn to counseling couples who are on the brink of divorce or going through it, and families who are on the brink of divorce or going through it. Particularly families, I guess, or couples that have children and they're not in a family setting like in therapy. But primarily, I want to do the best I can and everything in my power to make sure that if a couple is dead set on getting a divorce, they don't want to be together for whatever reason anymore, it's just not going to work, then fine. Like, I'm not trying to force people to stay together if it's not working. But that if they have kids, that it's the least negatively impactful on them as possible. I want to work with people to make sure that their divorce is constructive rather than destructive. And because, like, as amicable as my parents' divorce was, it was still traumatizing. So, like, I can't imagine what it's going to be like for my half brother, who's from my dad's marriage to my stepmom. I can't imagine what his viewpoint on marriage is going to be and how he's going to be affected going forward, because that divorce has been so awful for everybody involved. Very and I don't out. Want that to happen.
Yeah, it's been
drawn
been
out,
long thing,
angry, just like awful.
Yeah, manipulative. Yeah. And he's the centerpiece of this. He's kind of the pawn that gets tossed up and is just caught in the middle of a lot of this, which
yeah,
is really
that's,
sad.
That's a good point, how children are caught in the middle. Well stated. Yeah.
And something that I learned recently this term, we touched on, you know, the best approach to treating people going through a divorce, was that a lot of people view children as passive victims in divorce when they should be seen as like part of the decision-making process. Like, they are more involved than just being passive victims. And I think a lot of people don't see it that way, especially if they're of the view that like children should be seen but not heard, or in like similar viewpoints to that. But like, my brother's 11, he has opinions, like, and they should be heard. He's not a passive victim. And I want to make sure that, like, if I'm seeing an entire family going through a divorce, that I can make room for the child to be heard in a safe setting, so they feel validated, they feel like their feelings are being acknowledged, which I think is super helpful, because I don't remember being part of a decision-making process, which I probably didn't need to be necessarily, because my parents weren't fighting over custody. They didn't even like go to court. They just had a mediator and were like, this is how we're splitting things up. And then that was it. Wow. So, you know, why am I going to be part of that decision-making process? But I feel like that sits with me still, in that when I'm not heard, or when I feel like I'm not being heard, and when I feel like my opinions and desires don't matter, that's very triggering for me. And I think it can be related back to that. So giving kids the space to feel heard and validated when going through a divorce, I think can have lasting positive effects for them.
Yeah. I mean, we said earlier that this is a trauma event for you, as like you have one of the cases of the most amicable divorce. Objectively, we could say it worked out pretty well for your parents. And even still, your brothers and you had to go through this, understand the new dynamic and what that meant, and maybe feeling unincluded, unseen or unheard. So it is so valuable to include the child in this, so that like that trauma is lessened, because otherwise, as we keep saying, all these things that we work into our relationships now stems from our relationship with our parents, and these ruptured connections that we're trying to repair and now are assigning to our partners to say, please repair my trauma. So this is all stuff that they're going to have to deal with a therapist down the road, that they're like, then they have to deal with if you do not help them now. One question I had for you, which I think you kind of helped me see it now as well, as I was wondering if you could critically say about yourself if you might go into some of these counseling sessions with couples with any bias about whether you wanted to help them save the marriage or if you wanted to break them up.
Like, you two should get divorced.
Yeah, I mean, like, you you might have,
you know,
your own
what
opinions.
You guys, I think it's done. It's just done. Here's the papers. Yeah. We're done.
That's like very strong bias.
Just like, yeah, yeah. You just like, you know what? I'm gonna sow some discord up in this. But I think what you were saying, and what I hear is, and tell me if I'm receiving the message correctly, is that you're taking the side of the child. You, it was most important, is to view that perspective and say, like, if you guys are here in mediation and in therapy with me, that we need to include all the participants, the entire family in this, and understand how it affects everybody. And so that, like, whatever is the right choice, if it's to stay together or if it's to split, that the family understands this and are active participants so that the trauma is reduced.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, of course, like, I will have some biases, just because everybody does. Mm-hmm. But as I'm learning in my MFT program, is that as a family therapist, you approach things as, like, the problem is affecting the entire family unit and not just one person or another in said unit. So to approach it as, like, it's everybody's problem, essentially. Like, the problem is externalized so that it's not someone has a problem, but the problem itself is an entity that affects everybody. And mm-hmm. how can we work to deal with the problem in a way that's going to be beneficial for everybody? And my primary concern would be the children and how it affects them, because a lot of people leave them out of the conversation, I feel like. Mm-hmm. However, we also learn the importance of contextual factors. So, for instance, like, and I also think I have a good perspective on, like, should someone stay together or should they break up? Like, when it's clear to me that the people are too different, like, it's not going to work and it's not going to be beneficial for anyone to stay together, of course, I don't want you to stay together. And I'll be like, sure, let's figure out how to resolve this in a productive manner. Mm-hmm. But if there's potential, I would like to save it, because I think a lot of people are quick to abandon a relationship when it gets a little bit difficult. In the context of, okay, is this a happy, otherwise happy, healthy nuclear family? Is there any abuse? Is there any, like, is the child witnessing fighting all the time? Or is it, in my case, where they don't fight in front of the kids? Like, all of these contextual factors are important. And so I think my biases take a back seat to the contextual factors, mm-hmm. and making sure that it's going to be beneficial for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mother, and you're raising your hand in the back?
Yeah, I figure it might be good, because otherwise we step on each other sometimes. One thing I would say, when you're talking about how we might have our bias, as a therapist, my bias should not be, if I have a bias, I'll state it. Mm-hmm. Because that's, then they know whether they want to continue with me. They either agree with that bias, you know, that's kind of why they're there or they're not there, right? So if I say, you know, my bias might be that you do everything you possibly can before you accept that you can't do anything else, you know, and you're like, okay, well, that's our bias too. Okay, good. But if I have had people come in and have seen therapists who were doing marital therapy and they were arguing, and the marital therapist says, you two should just get divorced. And they're like, mm-hmm. we don't want to get divorced. And so they leave that marital therapist, come and see me. And I'm like, why would anybody tell mm-hmm. you what you're supposed to do? Yeah. It's like, that's not my role. My role is to tell you what my bias is. But but your role, your decision is still your decision. I am not going to tell you, you know, whether you should or shouldn't do something.
Right.
Other than express my opinions, like, hey, you know, this is a healthy, this is not a healthy, you know, those types of things. But what you decide about, you know, major life decisions, mm-hmm. That's your job, not mine.
It's incredibly, like, yeah, it's dangerous to have a therapist who's not understanding what their messaging can impact as well. You two know well enough, and this will be a share with the viewers, is like, Larissa and I had our own, you know, stopgap of like, I was really afraid. I was kind of ready to run away. And for many factors of my own, like inexperience and fears and detachment I was feeling. But also, I remember at the beginning of a lot of this fear and things I started to assign blame to Larissa for and started to use as excuses, I was seeing a therapist that I started to realize was not connecting with me and not giving me the right messaging. When I came to her with a story or shared something, she had a very strong reaction to something I would share that messed me up. That really, like, then she seemed to have some bias or experience towards towards an action and would assign that as like a super negative trait and make me think that like I definitely should be doing something that she might want me to do. And I realized, yeah, I realized quick enough I needed to change therapist for myself because that was not a healthy dynamic, and it caused discord with Larissa and I.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I remember that you'd ask me some thoughts, and I would go, "Well, I wouldn't. I don't know if I would say that. I don't mean." And I go, "Not. How would she be able to tell what another person is or isn't? She hasn't met that person. She's looking at from your own experience or your context. Why would she begin to make an assessment about this person without knowing this?"
Jumped
person?
Into with much more assumptions. And I had to challenge her on it later to be like, "It's not how it was. This is actually like trying to give her more context and, you know, for her to understand and apologize a little bit."
And that's like in applying what I've learned here recently, as a therapist, you choose which approaches you want to take. So like the more traditional approaches to marriage and family therapy, make the distinction that the therapist is the expert, and that's how they're seen. They're the expert, they're the leader, and then they tell you what to do. And then the more modern approaches is collaborative. They're on the same level. The therapist is not seen as an expert, and it's more of like the therapist then becomes part of the unit, and they're a team rather than a family following what a therapist says. So I think like your old therapist probably viewed herself as an expert and not as someone who's wanting to collaborate to make change.
Sure.
Whereas like, I think I don't want to be seen as an expert. I want to be part of a collaboration so that the families feel safe with me. Mm-hmm. They don't, like, it's not in my business to tell them what to do. I can only give them my opinions, and I can only listen to their opinions about my opinions. Mm-hmm. And then we reflect together about what makes the most sense going forward. Mm-hmm. And going back to like any kind of bias that I may have is like, while I wish maybe my parents hadn't gotten a divorce, I understand why they did. So I have both of those opinions. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I kind of live in this gray area of like, sure, I could lean towards like, you guys should stay together. But then I could also lean towards, you guys are clearly not right in this context for each other and maybe better off as friends or not in each other's lives at all. And that's also the perspective I have with my dad's divorce now is I wish they had never gotten married. I wish they hadn't even met. So for them to have stayed married upsets me more than if like they were to get divorced. So on the one hand, divorce is bad. My parents were divorced, made me sad. Traumatic. On the other hand, divorce is good. Stepmom and dad, not a good couple. Awful marriage. Get divorced, please.
Yeah. Toxic. Yeah, very toxic and damaging. You know, on the way out, it's the toxicity is even more evident, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
so
you're like basically saying, oh my gosh, this is, you know, so sad and so unfortunate, and yet so needed. So that the toxicity can ultimately not be, you know, there 24/7, so to speak. Because, I mean, that's the other part of divorce. Sometimes people say, you know, I still have to deal with that person because they're the mother of my child. And I'm still going to have, I say, but they would say, well, at least it's not all the time. You know, like it would be at least it won't be, you know, day in, day out or whatever it might be.
Sure.
So,
Something else that I'm realizing that I want to do is, in addition to counseling couples and families, is being a mediator for couples who are divorcing. And I know it can't be my couples who I'm counseling, but mm-hmm. like part of the time I do counseling, part of the time I do mediating for other couples that I'm not seeing. So it's not a conflict. Mm-hmm. But because hearing that my parents just used a mediator, they didn't go through court proceedings, they didn't have to. And mm-hmm. like mediation equals amicable in my view of this. Whereas my dad's divorced now, no mediator, attorneys, court system mm-hmm. creates a very adversarial relationship mm-hmm. as if it weren't bad enough that they were getting divorced. Now the court system is like, let me judge who's a better parent. And of course, I have my own opinion of who's a better parent. Mm-hmm. But now there's like, you need to come up with all these facts about why you're the better parent and why the other person is not a good parent. And it's a very, it's war. Like my dad and my stepmom are at war right now, and there are casualties being made in the mm-hmm. process. Mm-hmm. So if I can help couples leave the courts out of it and not leave the life of a child in the hands of some random person who is only going based off of the facts that are made available to them selectively mm-hmm. by each person's attorney, the child can have such a better life if their parents are like, let's do this amicably. Let's figure out how to remain at least cordial for them instead of becoming enemies on a deeper level in the court system. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just crazy how awful that is.
Yeah, it is. It's so ugly and so painful, and the damage, it's just so sad. I can sense how sad that is for you as well. And I'm just really sorry, you know, that you're seeing that happening now again in a different way.
You're still in it. You're truly, it's very valuable. The silver lining of like, you have these informed experiences, both sides of like how a divorce can be, I think, kind of extremes. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Like, good and really bad, to like understand that and to try to assist with that. It's a noble cause, and I admire you.
Thank you. And these experiences have informed my belief that I've held for a while, and that I think I've shared with you, Ryan, that before we have kids and we're married and you want to get a divorce, fine, like, we'll go through that. If it really can't be saved, we'll get a divorce. Once we have kids, though, you are stuck with me for the rest of your life, because I will not sign divorce papers. We're not doing it. We're figuring it out.
You will evade me. I was like, I can't even send divorce papers to you. You're on the lam.
I'll be like Kanye West. I'm like, I didn't see the papers.
I didn't see them.
I have no idea what's going on.
I can't even read, so I don't know how to tell you.
I can't read.
Right. You know, it's interesting, too, because as you're even describing this, it strikes me that you're actually even looking at the fact that before it was like, divorce, what's that? I didn't even know it was even possible, to now even like, oh, I'm not even going to be prepared for the fact that, you know, any relationship could be, but I am going to do everything I can to prevent it from happening in the sense of the context of a family. And that, you know, that seems to be the big, you know, neon sign that's being described here. Mm-hmm. Is I'm doing the best I can to avoid a repeat of that pattern. And yes, maybe divorce has to happen, but I prefer to make that not the case, if all possible. And it sounds like you would fight to the death almost.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Save the children. Can I ask mm-hmm. a slightly offbeat question? Mm-hmm. Only a little bit. We know that you're going to go, you're in school right now to pursue marriage and family therapy. And obviously it's something I love about you, obviously, is your emotional intelligence, your empathy that you can provide to people. And now you've known my mom for a little bit over the 2 years of our relationship. And after this conversation, like, you guys getting to know each other even more. Mm-hmm. Was I seeking to date my mother?
You know, Freud would say so. but Freud's been largely discredited by the modern psychological community.
And I don't hear him saying anything right now. You know, well, he's been real silent as of late. Suspicious.
Well, I did a paper on Freud when I was getting my bachelor's, and it was interesting. When I did that paper, I realized that he was really trying to solve his own problems.
Yeah, projection.
And a lot of that stuff that he was working on was really a lot of his own stuff. So I thought it was kind of an interesting thing.
He's like, I want to sleep with my mom. Everyone must want to sleep with their mom and kill their fathers, right? No. Everybody? Hey, guys, you too, right? Come on, guys. If I
you
publish
kill
this,
your dad,
if
right?
I publish this paper, it has to be true.
Okay, that's the most literal part of Freud's interpretation. Although it would still be the jealousy of, you know, the sharing the mom, so to speak.
I have no urge to kill my father. I just want to make that clear.
So, what a relief! So
finally, you got that relief.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that I, if it's all fair to Larissa, I think Larissa is a little bit like both dad and I. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that's kind of the other context is that sometimes your frame of reference of what you've been connected to, what you're used to. Mm-hmm. And so I, to be honest with you, I think she's a little bit of both of us.
Yeah. Again,
I'm a little bit country and a little bit rock and roll.
Yes, you are.
It's true. She's from Florida, now in LA. Like she got the both.
And that's true. So you know, and your father and I are very different from each other. I'm a country girl, he's a city boy.
This is true.
I'm more extroverted, he's more introverted. I mean, a lot of times we do find compliments to ourselves and we're looking for maybe the qualities and characteristics that aren't within ourselves that we see in someone else. Mm-hmm. And so that sometimes that's why the introvert and extrovert are attracted to each other, because the extrovert knows that they need to go a little bit more inward, even unconsciously. And then the introvert knows that they need to come more outward. Yeah. And so we have that piece that sometimes happens.
Remind me, Mom, did you meet Dad on a midnight train going anywhere? No? Okay.
We'll get into that subject some other time.
I want to say, though, that I think, you know, Ryan and I are good together because we complement each other. And like, while going back to my parents, like they were those extremes of like, my mom is very extroverted and my dad is very introverted. Mm-hmm. So that maybe those were too polarized that it didn't work. But I think like, I know that I want to work on being more extroverted. And Ryan is very extroverted, I think you could say, but also likes time for himself and like being alone to recharge. So we're close enough to the middle of the spectrum that we complement each other and help each other like fulfill the other half of that in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the openness to be stretched in that direction rather than, I don't want to have any.
Yeah.
I don't want to move, you know, beyond what I'm comfortable or what I'm used to, as opposed to, no, this actually could be good for me to become more expanded as a human being.
Sure.
So we got to wind down here.
Yeah. Should we ask the question?
Yeah.
Larissa.
Hey, Larissa, we were just wondering if there is a certain type of mantra or some type of belief that you go by on a regular basis that you'd like to share with the listeners.
I think that would be that context and perspective are everything. That you can't just have a knee-jerk reaction to something, that you have to take in the context surrounding the situation and the perspectives of everyone that are involved, and together those create the whole story that you can then form an opinion about. And I think if more people viewed things that way, there would be less conflict and more understanding.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful. I love
consideration.
That.
Thank Consider you. Other people and
yes.
Include them. Include the children in the conversation, people.
Yes.
Let
include
the
kids
be in the room.
Well, and the idea too is that sometimes when people are going through a divorce, they're so caught up in themselves, their own pain, their own difficulty, that they don't necessarily even see the bigger picture or what else is going on and how the children mm-hmm. are, you know, so profoundly hurt or affected, and they don't even know how they're, you know, they do, but they don't. I guess that's the best way to say it. Like, they're putting the child in the middle, and they'll go, I'll talk to couples and they'll say that. They'll say like, mm-hmm. well, you know, I can't talk to her. So that's why I asked them to ask her. And I'm like, you have to learn how to talk to your ex. It is not your child's responsibility to talk to your ex on your behalf. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, but they don't mind, you know, and they're like, well, you know, I kind of know that the kid's anxious because they're in the middle yeah. and this isn't helping them. And so I love that. I love what you're saying.
I love it.
Thank you.
I love it all. Mom, do you want to record some sort of family trivia, or do you have anything prepared right now?
You know, that'd be kind of fun to ask our guests to be a part of the family trivia. That would be even interesting, kind of spice it up.
Yeah.
I can go back to the family trivia that we didn't record.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the one that I asked you. I said, do you remember your first kiss?
Do I remember my first kiss?
Mm-hmm.
Did we not record this? Okay. I feel like the first kiss, and maybe you'll correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't really a real one. It was when I was like 5 or 6 years old that I kissed a girl at school. We were in like one of the playrooms and we just started jokingly kissing each other. And I think you guys had some sort of reaction of being like, do you know what that means? I was like, it's just fun. It's fine. I think that was what could be like my first, you know, lips to lips.
What you remember as your first kiss.
Sure.
Yeah. But you were in preschool.
Some preschool or something. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Other than that,
a girl.
I kissed a girl. I liked it. other than that, my first like real kiss with a girl wasn't until like high school sometime. It was a while later.
I guess it wasn't too memorable.
Not very memorable.
Well, that's sad.
It's okay.
Okay, go ahead. You got a question.
What was something when you first met Dad that mm-hmm. you didn't like about him?
Oh, wow. I can't say it wasn't didn't like.
The mustache? facial hair? How'd you feel about his facial hair?
He dressed a little nerdy. And it's kind of funny because when I start dating him, he started buying all kinds of new clothes. You know, it's like he just totally changed his look. I was like, oh man, this is, you know, this is cool.
He changed. He tried to catch up.
Yeah, but he, you know, he just didn't have a need to, like, I guess change his, you know, I guess it's popular again now, but you know, he had like the sweater vest, you know, with the shirt sleeves.
Yes, the sweater vest.
You know, those kinds of things. And it was just, you know, it wasn't as, you know, current. And, you know, I was certainly a little more current in my attire.
I'm sorry, are you saying that sweater vests are popular now?
I've seen some people wear them.
Okay,
well, you know, I'm not trying. I'm not going to judge a person by their attire, obviously, because I still dated your dad.
True. Hey, guest, do you have a question for either of us to jump in with a little bit of family trivia?
I would like to know from both of your perspectives,
mm-hmm.
when was the first time you were grounded and what was it about?
Ooh, you go first, Mom. Tell me the first time you think you grounded me.
Oh, that I grounded you? I thought we were just talking about our experience, not.
Oh, yeah. Is it about me or is it like our own groundings?
Well,
did you ground me, Ryan?
I tried to.
You're grounded, Mom. You are not going out of this house.
You didn't give me the praise I demanded. Now you must suffer.
I thought about it as like from Ryan's perspective, the first time he was grounded. Mm-hmm. And from your perspective, Julie, the first time you grounded him.
Yeah.
Because the way I remember the first time I was grounded, my mom insists did not happen. So I'm interested to know the perspective from each person about that one event.
Sure. Okay.
Well, I know when I grounded you.
The first time? Okay, tell me.
You came back with a progress report that was in our family, the expectation was is that you already being gifted was going to be that you were not going to go below a B. Mm-hmm. And if you had a C, you were not living up to your potential. And I would then have to, your dad and I would have to then challenge you to get back on track to living up to your potential. So therefore, mm-hmm. you were grounded when your progress report came in.
This was junior year of high school, for context. Junior year of high school.
He never got grounded a lot.
I didn't, not usually I was like restricted of going out. I didn't go out.
Like a loss of a video game or a loss of a TV or something. But this was this was much more of a grounding.
Yeah. The first, I will provide two answers to this. Because there's one that's bigger than the other, kind of. One of the first groundings, I don't think my mom, we've brought this up before, that she recalls, is when I was doing gymnastics as a kid and started with tumbling, and I was into that, and I was somewhat gifted in that too. I just started to realize more and more how much dedication it would take. And as a child, the stress on your hands and body was a lot. Like I was getting, you know, rips on my pads of my fingers and everything. And when my mom brought me into a new gym, into a new course, I did not like it. It was suddenly so much more than I was ready for. And I really felt behind these other kids who were like way above me. And I suddenly was just like, it's too much for me now. And I told her that very abruptly. I remember it being like my second or third time trying to go to one of these classes, me like not wanting to get out of the car and being like, I don't want to go. I just don't want to go. And she's like, I paid a lot of money for this. You got to go.
That's not what it's.
You have to. And she whipped me. no, she didn't. But I was like, I just don't want to. And I maybe unloaded the fears about it on you. And you're like, okay, well, then if like you don't go, you know, there's going to be some sort of consequence. And the agreement was I would have TV taken away from me for a week. And so I was grounded from TV for a week. And that's what I recall as one of the first groundings. She's shaking her head. She doesn't believe this is true.
First of all, you never lost TV for a week. That would have been pure hell. So I don't even know how you came up with that reality.
Yeah.
So it's so funny how we remember things differently. Your gymnastics teacher that you absolutely loved quit suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
You got a new gymnastic teacher who was not nurturing, not fun.
It was a different facility though, wasn't it? I remember going to a brand new facility.
But it was just changing a building. It wasn't the class was the same. Oh. The kids were the same. They just moved the building.
They moved
the program to a different building.
Mm-hmm.
And you had been assigned to this new teacher because this other teacher quit. Mm-hmm. And you were very attached to that other teacher. You loved going there. He was fun. And then it turned into all work and no play. This guy was the opposite.
Why did he quit? Did I do something? Was it my fault?
No, never.
Okay.
It had nothing to do with you, any of the kids. It was just, there's a issue with the people he was working for.
Sure.
And when you didn't want to do it, I mean, I did understand in so many ways that emotionally it was different for you. I just wanted to teach you a value, which is I wanted you to finish, you know, complete what you start, you know, that it was more important to not lose that lesson of that, you know, if you say you want to do something and you did, you had said you wanted to do something, but it was with the other guy. And so when we switched it, this guy, new guy comes in and they change buildings and so forth and so on. You were like, oh, I hate this.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, Ryan, you know, just, it's important that you just finish it out. Just finish it out. Finish what you started. That was what I was raised with. Finish what you started. So I probably did say at one point, if you don't do it, you're going to be grounded for a week from TV.
Mm-hmm.
What I did do though was different. And what I did do is I reevaluated that it was so emotionally painful for you that I said to you, all you need to do is go tell him and to yourself. So I just said, I want you to go tell the coach, and that may have been right or wrong on my part. I said, but I thought if there was going to be any lesson learned, if I'm going to feel like I taught you anything, it would be, is that at least you tell the coach you're not going to come anymore, because then at least I felt like you were taking the step to be responsible to let the coach know. Now, you're a young kid, but at the same time, I was like, I don't know. You got to understand us Germans, like we're all about teaching responsibility. So, you know, I was like, teach him responsibility.
Ah, I remember that. I do remember being told to do it. I don't remember that conversation exactly.
And then, so when you did that, that was the only expectation.
Yeah.
Then you weren't grounded. That did not happen.
Yeah. Oh.
You ask your brother.
Agree to disagree.
Ask your brother.
Okay, we'll have to have him on the podcast, and we'll ask him about it.
He'll have to say when that didn't happen, right?
The other story, I said this was a two-parter answer. Is when my brother and I got caught looking at pornography, and we had some consequences and some things taken away from us. That was a big one.
You know what? That's true.
That was a big one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. There was a loss of ability to be on anything that you could have access with without supervision.
Yeah. We couldn't be on the computer when you guys weren't home. I recall that.
Which, you know, we're kind of naive ourselves as parents to think that these young kids wouldn't be exposed as early as, unfortunately, young kids are now. Hearing about it in school and then coming home and hearing about from a kid and then, you know, so, you know, maybe it's a good message to tell parents that your young children can learn it from another kid, that there's some options here. So,
yeah, great question. Thanks for that question.
You want to know the story of what made me think of it?
Sure.
So when I was like 3 or something, maybe 4, I was friends with my next door neighbor who had a swing set, and we were hanging out on the swing set. There were 2 swings, and I happened to be sitting on his favorite swing, which was no different than the other swing, and I wouldn't get off. And he started crying. It was a whole ordeal. And what I remember is that my mom grounded me for that.
My gosh.
And she says that never happened. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like that was my first ever memory. Like, yeah,
that was well, an early trauma event. It formed some pathways for you. Wow.
But it does sound out of character for her. I will say that, because she never really grounded me. So who knows? Maybe I made it up.
Yeah, and I think about grounding too. A lot of times it is like you can't go anywhere, do anything, see anybody. And, you know, and we really never did that kind of all or nothing approach, you know. Yeah. You know, it was more like we're going to take that privilege away or so forth and so on.
That was awesome. Great questions. That was fun. I enjoyed that round of family trivia and with our guest here. And I must say, I enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed and appreciate you sharing your experience. I feel like I knew most of
me
that
share.
But of course this is helpful for us and for obviously our entire dynamic, and even with my mom included, to talk about all these this history. I think it's really healthy, and I enjoyed. I'll say it again, I love you.
I love you too.
And I love both of you. So this is all love.
Yay, love, love, love.
Well, we want to just thank the listeners for being with us today.
And we love you, listeners, not to let them be excluded. We do love you. We don't know you on that level, but we love you in a very appropriate way, whatever you feel comfortable with.
Yes, yes. I definitely send love to all our listeners.
Thanks again, Larissa, for being with us. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We hope you'll join us next time for another episode of Therapy with My Mom.
Bye, everybody. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Therapy with My Mom. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can best support us by reviewing and downloading the episode on whatever platform you listen on. Tell your family and loved ones about the show, and don't forget to follow and engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Therapy With My Mom. You can also email us at therapywithmymom@gmail.com with any topic suggestions or stories you might want to have shared on the show.
Great job, Ryan.
Thanks, Mom.